way.
Got there in the end. I just had to email myself the link, and then I typed it all out, but then for some reason it asked me for a passcode.
You typed the whole URL out?
Yeah.
What? Why would you like do 80. That? Welcome to Somewhere in Between, the Early Careers podcast brought to you by the RCGP. My name's Mira. I'm an AIT working in London. And today I'm joined by Johannes and Hatim. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
As you can tell, this is not the usual voice of Ant that brings the podcast to you. So bear with us as we navigate these new waters. But Ant will be back with us very soon, I am sure. We're going to dive straight into an episode today. A few weeks ago, Ant and I had the chance to speak to Dr. Stephanie Slater. She is a GP trainee working in North London. And she spoke to us very candidly, openly, and inspiringly, I must say, talking about her struggles with well-being whilst working as a doctor. We'll jump straight into that now.
We're really thrilled to be joined by Stephanie Slater, who is a GP trainee in West London. Hi, Steph. Do you want to just introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit more about you, yourself.
Hi there. Yes, of course. Thank you so much for having me on. As you said, I am a GP trainee and my base hospital at the moment is Chelsea Westminster. I'm an ST2. And within theme of this podcast, something else to know about me is that I have anxiety and depression. And that's what we're probably going to chat about a bit today.
Definitely. I mean, I think obviously the subject of this is all about mental health. And I think it's particularly interesting to hear from somebody with lived experience who is a GP trainee. It's something that I feel like we don't hear enough, and there aren't, as you know, for me, there aren't as many visible role models as there should be for people who are really open and kind of freely talking about the types of issues that are so common amongst so many trainees. So it's, yeah, we're really thrilled that you're kind of really going to be sharing with us some of your experiences. I'm sure it will make a massive difference to lots of people who are able to listen to this podcast as well.
Oh, thank you.
In terms of kind of your journey with your mental health, what's kind of like this, what, when you tell kind of a story about your own experience with mental health, where do you begin? What would you say?
Of course. Yeah. So, I mean, cut me off if I'm going on for too long, guys, because this could go on forever. I first, when I really think back to things and really reflect on things, I have struggled with my mental health or had symptoms since I was even in primary school. I remembered back to having a panic attack in some of my exams. And then in secondary school, I think it was year 9 that I had my first suicidal thoughts and was really low that year and was crying lots. And my family were very supportive of me and wanted me to kind of get help. And, you know, and I was always like, no, I'm fine. I can do this. Going on to university, I had a definite period of depression for a few weeks, managed to hide that away and got better in inverted commas and carried on with life. And then it took till November 2019. So just a couple of years ago, and my partner ended our relationship and I was plunged into very horrible heartbreak. And along with that came very severe anxiety to the point where I was crying every day. I was in a work placement that was luckily really supportive and had an amazing supervisor and amazing people around me. But I was crying every day at work. I wasn't sleeping well. And I remember one day being asked to prescribe something and I couldn't even compute that question in my brain. And I remember just thinking, wow, I don't think I'm safe to be looking after my patients right now. And that was a thing that made me think, okay, now I need to start listening to people and get some help. And that point, I went to see my GP and they referred me to the practitioner health program, which I don't know if you guys have heard of. And I was referred for some counseling, which I was so grateful for. You know, it was scary going initially, but it completely changed the way that I thought about myself and how I treated myself. And, you know, they told me things like, you're worthy no matter who you are, what you do, what you achieve, all these kind of things, and started me off on very cheesy, on like a self-love journey or, you know, being kinder to myself kind of thing. And then unfortunately my grandparents passed and it was another bit of a tough time. But then I got into 2020, I can't even remember what year we're in, 2020. And I was like, yay, all fun times. It's going to be a new year. And then obviously COVID hit. which plunged me, unfortunately. I was living by myself at the time, and unfortunately I became incredibly anxious again, and to the point where I couldn't leave the house and couldn't get to work. And so again, spoke with my GP, was referred to some for PHP again, and got cognitive behavioral therapy, which was massively important. But I think it's really interesting that along probably during this time, since I got professional help, people had always said, oh, you know, what do you think about antidepressants? And do you, you know, maybe that would be something that'd be helpful. And I have over the time just realized how much stigma I had attached to that, mental health in general, but especially medication. And I'd always thought to myself, oh, not for me. I can push through this. I can go through this. And I think I always thought to myself that I was strong because I didn't need medication. And it took me until January this year to actually accept and say, oh, you know, actually, I think it's stronger to want to look after myself and to want to do everything for my mental health, to, you know, any try all the options and try the recommendations and accept this. Because at the end of the day, that's being kind to myself, and that's showing me that I want to look after myself and I want to be here and I'm important. And I think it's bizarre, because if you'd have talked to me 3 years ago, I would have never told anyone I had any problems with my mental health. I would have never, ever wanted to share with anyone that I was on sertraline tablets or that anything like that. And I think, as well as a doctor, I think there's a thought of, oh, that, you know, we know all these things, so we're probably dealing with it really well. Whereas really, I think it's very hidden. People are still hiding it. And a lot of people are struggling, and especially with the COVID pandemic. I think I feel so horrible and so sad for the people who are going through similar things that I've been through for the first time, like anxiety and stress and depression, PTSD. And I'm just really hopeful that people realize that it's not something to be ashamed of. And I wish, I'm hoping that in years to come, our work environments are more supportive of that. But it's okay to not be okay, and there's support out there, and you're deserving of support. And one of the things that my supervisor, when I got really unwell and got professional support, told me was that my health is more important than my job. And no one had ever told me that before. And that was, I was like, oh, is it? Are you sure? And, you know, but no one had ever said that to me. And that was a real moment of like, wow, that's a different way of looking at things.
I mean, thank you so much, Steph, for sharing that story. And I think I can definitely safely say, I think what you've said will resonate with a lot of people and actually speak to a lot of trainees, first fives and GPs. It goes without saying, as we know, it's in the news all the time. I see it on my Twitter feed at the moment. People have had a really hard year, but GPs have had a really particularly difficult time and are continuing to be in dire straits, if you know, if my Twitter feed's anything to go
yeah by. No, I would agree,
that's for sure. And I think some of the things that you're saying really do hit home. It is that concept of as doctors we are geared to be the healer, and we're going there to be that professional person that is there for other people, being a sounding board, listening, using all of those skills to offer out what we can, but actually having the ability and the skill to realize when our own battery's on reserve and what we do, and maybe when things are even more significant than that and we do actually need some professional help. And it always reminds me of that phrase, is like, who guards the guards? You know, where that line lies. So I think it's a really important message, and it's something that we, as Ant said, have to sort of be talking about more and more.
Yeah, definitely.
One of my questions for you is, if there was somebody who is maybe listening to this and thinking, oh, that does sound a little bit like me, or I might be going through that, or I know someone who might be going through that, what would your advice be to that individual?
Yeah, of course. I think it's really tricky. And I think that I always used to feel like I knew myself best, and I could decide what I needed and what I didn't need. And I knew what treatment I could have and not have. But I think if you recognize in yourself that you are either not functioning correctly, which I'm hoping they're not at, because I'm hoping they've not got to that stage, or just constantly worried about things, or usually always tipping into low mood, or any of these kind of what people might say, oh yeah, quite common that, you know, or incredibly stressed at work and not feeling able to cope. I think there's different ways of looking at it. So I'm massively into self-care. So just basically being kind to yourself and finding out what you enjoy and making time for that and realizing that, that's important, and relaxing and doing things that are good for your mental health are incredibly important and need to form a part of your life. But also just speaking to your GP. I don't think there's any, with my Instagram account, I think I have a lot of people who say to me, oh, I think I might be depressed. What should I do? And I don't give out any personal advice, but I will always say to people in general, please go speak to your GP and talk it through with someone or a close friend or loved one, if that's what they prefer. The only part that I would say about talking to a close friend or loved one is that, unfortunately, I've had experience and I've got other people who've had experience of not getting the reaction that they expected or not getting the reaction that they wanted. And I think it's really important to remember that that does not invalidate your feelings. Whatever you're feeling is your feeling. No one else can tell you you're not feeling that and that that's not valid and that's not true. And so I think sometimes speaking to a professional about things, that's why it's been so much more helpful for me. It's really difficult because I know our resources are so short and our GPs, just as we've said, are incredibly busy. And there are amazing helplines out there like the Samaritans helpline. And also our frontline is a joint thing with Samaritans Shout Charity Hospice and Mind. And they have a special line for healthcare professionals and frontline workers. And I also think looking into the PHP, the NHS Practitioner Health Programme, which is for doctors and dentists, would be an amazing thing to do because you get assessed by a doctor and then get a recommendation of how you get treatment. And it blows my mind that I never knew about it. You know, I had no idea it existed, and I've been a doctor for 6 years now, and it's just bizarre. I'm like, wow, this is incredibly important. And just as we were saying, you know, you get taught to look after patients and to put and how to best manage them. But at no point really in my medical training, whether it was university or a foundation year, did anyone say, and also you have to look after yourself. We don't get taught that. I mean, hopefully maybe now it's taught, but we don't get taught to look after ourselves, but also how to look after ourselves. And I think those things are incredibly important. And that's why I'm so grateful for resources like PHP and other support mechanisms. But I think it's a mixture of both. The biggest thing for me is learning to be kind to myself, which has taken a really long time, and to not put pressure on myself. And I still struggle at work. And, you know, I was at work recently and it was incredibly busy. And, you know, I was saying, oh, I need to hurry up. And then I thought, no, take a deep breath. You can only do what you can do. You are not a superhero. You are not someone who can suddenly do the work of two doctors. You're you, and that's great. And that's all you need to be. And you're going to try hard, but you do your best. You know, I think there's this pressure on us to just keep going amongst everybody, doctors, nurses, and, you know, everyone, every healthcare professional and everyone working in the NHS at the moment. And I think it's just about realizing that you're as important as your patient. And just because we want to look after people and that's our aim doesn't mean that our health doesn't come first. So trying to get that.
I think it's really important what you say about when you first went to PHP and they said, actually, your own health is much more important than your job. And I think it's true of, you know, anyone with a kind of professional career, but perhaps particularly amongst more vocational careers like medicine, that a lot of our identity gets tied up in our job and our sense of worth is often can be based too much on our careers. I guess kind of unpicking that, and I think also particularly in medicine and other fields, there's still a lot of stigma about being a doctor, talking about your own mental health or your own healthcare issues in general. In your experiences, when you've been going through this over the last few years, being a doctor, have you experienced stigma against kind of like, whether that's directly at you or others around, you know, doctors discussing or being open about their mental health issues?
Yeah, I think it's, I wrote an article a few months ago on stigma in the NHS. And I think it's something that is just unfortunately still massively an issue. I just don't think we don't openly talk about looking after our mental health. I don't know any seniors apart from the amazing one that I was luckily working with when I got unwell, who encourage people to actually you know, see people say have a good lunch break, but then give you a list of 20 jobs. And I think there's just this, such a disconnect between, oh yes, look after yourself, but also get all this work done. And also, oh, don't leave late because that's silly. But, you know, again, as we said, you can't suddenly do everything in like a second. It's just not, it's not a possibility. We're not robots. And I think that's what makes us good doctors, is that we're not robots. Because I think a lot of it is all the empathy and the conversation and the connection with people. One thing that really didn't help me was, I remember in my foundation year 2 year, when I reflect back, I was definitely suffering with pretty bad anxiety. And I was in a job where, you know, lunch breaks were frowned upon and very much everyone stayed late. Everyone just continued to work. All my seniors were incredibly stressed and incredibly burnt. Well, in my opinion, burnt out. And I had a meeting with my supervisor, broke down crying and said, I'm just not coping. And I didn't recognize it as anxiety at all at that time. But instead of my supervisor recognizing it as anxiety, or even just as struggling and needing support and directing me to my GP, she just said, I think you're maybe too empathetic to be a doctor. And I think that is, and, you know, is this the right career for you? And, you know, to have someone who's supposed to be supporting you through this and to say, and to know that empathy is something that is often said that is a key part of being a doctor, is, you know, being able to be empathetic, and to them to say, you're too empathetic, you're not coping, this isn't the great career, you know, really, really made me question whether medicine was the right career for me. And I think it's just this lack of feeling that it's okay to have a mental health problem, and lack of humanizing us. It's like, you know, we're very much not humans, and that's not what we're supposed to show. And it's such a shame, because I completely believe that, worried about it for weeks, changed my career a few times, didn't know if I was going to be a doctor for a while. And I'm not blaming that solely on that person. And I don't think it's just that. I think it's a culture. I think it's a culture of the NHS and the doctors and everything. And there's also, I mean, if you look at things in terms of, timetables and work timetables and stuff, I know particularly in surgical specialties, people are expected to work 24-hour shifts, potentially meaning they're up for 24 hours. And even though you might think of that as just a physical problem, but, you know, a physical strain, it's actually, you're not sleeping. As soon as you don't sleep, your mental health is automatically going to be affected. And there's no way that some surgical trainees, I'm sure some are well supported, but there's no way that they're coming in and saying, oh, I'm too tired to do this, I'm going to go rest and look after my well-being. Because what will happen is the senior of that person will say, well, they don't want this enough, and that they don't want to work, and they're not keen. And really, I think we need to change our whole mindset, because at the end of the day, I'm sure we can all agree as doctors that our main goal is good patient care. And even for the people who don't want to put themselves first, if I was a patient, I do not want a tired, stressed, depressed, anxious doctor who's struggling and doesn't feel supported and isn't enjoying their work. I want someone who feels able to, yes, I mean, don't get me wrong, I've been anxious at work before, I've been depressed at work before, that's not something we can always change, but I want someone who feels supported enough to enjoy their work and to want to be there and want to help patients. Because, you know, all these things at the end of the day are going to affect patient care and going to change how people are treated. So yeah, I definitely think, unfortunately, stigma is still there. And a lot of my colleagues, if I ever share with them about if they're having a bad day and I say, well, you know, I've got anxiety, I really struggle. And they say, what? You've got anxiety? You know, like, what? Really? I mean, now I've got an Instagram account, so I think some of them like know about it already. But, you know, they're always like, what? Really? And I'm like, yeah, and that's normal and that's okay. And, you know, have you spoken to your GP? And the amount of people who haven't spoken to anyone and just carry on going is a real shame, I think.
I mean, I think essentially what we need, Steph, are more people like you, and they're, you know, slowly, and it's definitely coming into a culture where I am seeing more trainees who are being open across different specialties, and trying to garner for better representation, not just in terms of us seeing more ethnic minority faces or people with physical disabilities, but also those with mental health problems.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think that there's a long, long way to go. And I think fundamentally it feeds into the whole issue that we have, which will effectively be burnt out workforce, as you say, but also the problem with retention of staff. Yeah. We know that the NHS is this massive vessel that is sailing on, you know, a sea of good intentions.
Yes.
But it's it's full of holes, and effectively we're not able to keep that water out, and we are at risk of drowning. In fact, we could say that some of the parts of the ship have sunk.
Yeah,
going with absolutely. That analogy, and I agree with you. I think that there is a huge stigma in general in having mental health problems. We know that that is the case for people that we advocate for within psychiatry and mental health,
yeah,
specifically in adolescence, but also across the spectrum of all ages and in old age. And we reflect that back as doctors. We are usually quite a diverse population of people who represent lots of different cultures, lots of different communities. And by virtue of that, we'll have a host of diseases, including mental health problems. So we aren't, you know, as you say, immune to that in any way, shape or form. So how do we best support and represent ourselves as a group? And I agree with you. I think that has to start from training. And by training, I mean, as medical students, being aware of what it means to be a doctor is one thing, but being aware of what it means to be good to yourself and your own well-being and your mental wellness as a concept of itself. And I think, I mean, I'm involved in the bits of medical education here and there, and I know that some medical schools really have taken this on board and are building that into their curriculum. But there's always a focus on, you know, getting the anatomy right, getting the physiology right, passing your exams, you know, the tick box exercises. But you know, if you've got a medical student on your ward who's looking a little bit lost and a little bit anxious, talk to them about it. Ask them if they're okay. And that doesn't just go for them. It goes all the way right up into your consultant, you know. And I agree with you. I think we really do need to start talking about it more.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I also think the point that you made about the retention and the fact that things are difficult in the NHS and people are getting to the point where they're burnt out and can't work anymore. How amazing would it be? And how much more would you want to go to work if you were going to a place where they were like, are you okay? Do you need half an hour? Have you had a really rubbish moment? And do you want to take a little break for half an hour and, you know, gather yourself? And, you know, have you slept today? Have you rested today? How can we help? Because if you're in an environment where everyone is supporting each other and everyone cares for everyone, suddenly you want to be there more. And you know that if you're struggling that day, then you've got the support around you. And also they know that you're less likely to be struggling because you're not putting that pressure on yourself, because you've not got in your head this worry of, well, I need to do this, I need to do this, I need to do this, and I'm expected to do this, and I've got to do this, and I've got to get that right, and I can't tell anyone that I'm stressed, and I've just got to keep my head down and just get on with it. And I think, as we said, I think it's unfortunately a bit of a long way off, but the more we can talk about things, the more we can raise awareness, the more we can normalize mental health and end the stigma, you know, I think it just points us in a much more positive direction to build this culture of we all care about each other. And because, you know, that's how things get done in a hostile environment where everyone's hiding everything and people are ashamed, and people unfortunately are off the time. I'm sure you guys would agree, when people, colleagues or anyone working for the NHS snaps or is really angry or says something that was quite horrible, and you get hurt by that as the person who's receiving it, you know, now I'm much more in a better place to say, oh gosh, I think they're having a really tough time. I think they're having a really difficult day, and I really hope they're okay. And I hope they're getting support because it sounds like they're really struggling. Whereas before it was like, how can they be so rude to me? I can't believe they've been so rude to me. This is horrible. This is, you know, and you know, you make them into this evil person, and immediately, and then there's this divide of, well, that person's horrible, that person's horrible. And actually you can think, you know, I can't do it all the time. Don't get me wrong. I'm nowhere near perfect. But a lot of the time now I can think to myself, they're probably having a really tough day. I might have been having a tough day as well, but it's just being more human, I just think, is so important.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the other thing that trainees undoubtedly sort of face, and there is a scrutiny, but across the board, is we do unfortunately sometimes work in a blame culture, you know, people who are seen to be taking days off. It's a punitive list, isn't it? You're threatened with maybe not getting your ARCP, or you're not going to be passing this particular assessment, or the supervisor won't sign off your form. And often that prevents trainees and others from seeking help at the time that probably would have been optimal for them to receive that exact help. And by actually leaving it later and later means that they're much more likely to face intense difficulties further down the line, when it can have significant ramifications on their careers as well. So, you know, it's talking about it, but also I guess our systems and processes need to be better designed as well.
They do.
I think we hopefully are sort of in VTS cultures as GP trainees where people are encouraged to talk about some of the difficulties they face. But again, it's higher up than that. What do your training program directors think? What's the culture around sort of reporting processes, or people who have been off sick for some time? Are people just sort of putting that down to, you know, oh, they don't want to attend teaching because they can't be bothered and they don't want to log into Zoom and it's COVID? Or is it they've just had, you know, their partner has left them, or they've had something horrible happen in their family because of COVID, or you know, it could be a whole host of things, or, you know, exam uncertainty, which is something that's definitely facing a lot of trainees at the moment. And so as much as it comes from us and to go up, it also needs to be sort of a top down look into things.
I completely agree. And I mean, that's why, I mean, we can do what we can, but it's, I mean, I hope that I'll have the opportunity to put more pressure on the top people as I go through my career, and I'll do what I can, but I completely agree. And also just to point out the human aspects of it, I have done exactly that. In my, I can't remember if it was F1 or F2, there was one of my colleagues who was off sick for 3 weeks, and I just thought, oh, they're just avoiding work. They're just, I mean, I can't believe she's off work. Like, and I remember another colleague trying to speak to me about their mental health, and just thinking to myself, why are they talking to me about this? Like, this is so awkward. Like, I don't need to hear about all their problems right now. I have been there. And I mean, I personally was in massive denial about the fact that I had my own mental health struggles. But it's okay to have those moments, as long as you can realize that, you know, you can change and you can think about things differently. And I just think it's so common that that is still the mindset. And as you said, this blame culture, unfortunately, is just still there. And hopefully things will change, because it would be a nicer world if it did.
I was just interested in, on a kind of different note, on your reflections. Obviously, as doctors, we all practice in slightly different ways based on who we are, our previous experiences, our lives. And I guess going the struggles that you've had with your mental health, how would you say that they've kind of impacted on the interactions, the style that you consult with patients? Would you say there's been kind of any positive things that have come out of the experiences that you've had, and any kind of learnings that or reflections that you could share with us on that?
Yeah, definitely. I'm a bit of an oversharer, and so it depends on the patient, but I have definitely, a quick point on this. If you have a mental health struggle, you do not need to be open about it. I have some people message me on Instagram saying, oh, I don't feel able to be open about it to everyone yet. And I say, you don't need to be open to everyone about it. I'm very chatty and an oversharer. That is just how I am. That does not mean, you know, you can still be working on your mental health issue and getting support and not tell anyone. That's okay. But please get support from someone, probably a professional. But I think a lot of trust I have with people is when other people have been through things and other people have experienced things. And so personally, as someone who's quite open in sharing their experiences, I've had a lot of luck in saying to people who are stressed or anxious, it's okay to be stressed or anxious. I personally get very anxious and I have anxiety, and I also say to them what I've done. So for example, I couldn't sleep for a while a couple of months ago, and it was going on for a couple of weeks, and I was getting really frustrated. And at the time, I tried these Headspace get back to sleep meditations, and they just worked really well. And I was like, wow, this is great. And so I was telling my patient about this, and he was like, oh, really? Oh, can you help me download them? Oh, okay. They worked for you, did they? Oh, I'll do that. And you know, I think that was really good. And I think for people who, whenever someone seems embarrassed, I don't think it has to come from you, but I think if you as a doctor are able to say to them, that's okay, it's okay to not be okay, and that's normal, and a lot of people experience what you're experiencing, it just makes them feel less alienated and less ashamed and less embarrassed and everything else. And so I think it's really helped. I also think I'm working in a hospice at the moment, which I'm really enjoying, and I just think I'm learning so much invaluable stuff which I will apply to my role as a GP. But you learn how much psychological aspects impact physical symptoms and how connected they are. And I think that's been really interesting, especially looking at things like pain in the hospice and, you know, talking about, well, is this, yes, they've got physical pain, but actually they're also very psychologically distressed. And how does that affect them? And is that adding to it? And it's not something that necessarily means you can fix it by doing something or other, but being able to assess people and say, okay, they've got this pain, you know, they've been on this medication, it's not helped that much. Is there anything else I can do? And being able to widen your differentials and, you know, look at the social aspects. I literally was taught today about total pain, which is very exciting, and which I'm sure you'll know loads about, Mira, which is like the spiritual, social, emotional and physical aspects of pain, and how, you know, you need to see things as a whole. And just, it's massively encouraged me to be more holistic. And it's something that I loved anyway, because as you can tell, I'm quite chatty and I like, you know, getting all the info. But I think it's been great for that. So yeah, definitely.
I mean, I think it brings it full circle, really, because I guess one of the really important things that you have mentioned, but in general, we've heard a lot from colleagues that speak about this, is that the ability to be open when that suits you in terms of your personality can speak to a lot of your patients. That ability to show that you can empathize and be in somebody else's shoes and say, actually, I understand the struggle that you may be through, or I can kind of understand the point at which you've come to me for help because you really feel that this is important to you. It might not mean that in the context to me and what I know about, but you sound like you're really struggling, and I'm therefore here to be able to help you and open maybe some doors that you hadn't even considered. So I think on a positive note, it's one of those things of recognizing we are human, as we said at the start, and that by injecting a little bit of that humanity into consulting and our patient care can only be really a good thing. That allows us to be a little bit closer to our patients. And Lord knows we need that as a profession right now, don't we, really?
Yeah, definitely.
We definitely do. I guess kind of to round things off, you've spoken a bit about kind of your kind of self-care routine, and you know, you've got things in place to help support you and keep you well and happy. In terms of like what that looks like for you, are there any other kind of key things that really work well for you, or things that kind of bits of advice that you would give for anybody listening that have worked well that you would encourage other people to look into?
Yeah, definitely. So I can definitely talk about what I find helpful, but I always say what is probably most important is, or what was the most important point for me was saying, I'm important. I deserve to A, relax, and B, have fun. And you forget that life is here to have fun, you know, because you're busy and you're stressed and everything else. And I think I massively got into the point, this is how it all started and then it snowballs. And I just wasn't having any fun. I wasn't allocating. Sorry, I'm very much like that person who plans fun, but I probably am. But, you know, I think it's really important to find out what you enjoy so that you can do it and make time to do it and just go and do it. So for me, exercise has been massive. So anything that makes me get a sweat on, I get endorphins, and the endorphins just massively change my mood. So, and obviously it's great for physical health as well. So I mean, I always recommend that to everyone, and choose whatever exercise is best for your mood. For me, it's all the endorphins. Concentrating on sleep has been massive. That was something that went completely out the window when I was unwell, and has gone off other times as well. And I think we massively underestimate how important sleep is. I'm about to read a book about sleep. I've totally forgotten who it's by. But I think it's going to be very good. But just the importance of how it completely resets the brain. It's important for physical health. It's important for mental health. And, you know, you can look at really silly examples. Like if you don't get much sleep, you're much more likely, I feel, to become emotional or to overreact to things. And, you know, even in those kind of ways. So sleep is a massive thing. Doing the relaxation stuff, so self-care in terms of and laughing, so doing fun things and planning fun things into your week, I think is really important. And just being kind to yourself as well. For panicky type moments, I've used something called box breathing before. There's loads of different breathing techniques, but it's the one where you breathe in for four, hold for four, breathe out for four, hold for four, and just go round and kind of deep breaths and settling. And the Headspace meditation that I did to help me get to sleep when I was struggling quite a while ago, struggling recently, was all about deep breathing. And I really think that helps to totally relax me. But also in those panic moments, I think it's taken me a really long time to get there, but just being kind to myself, because when you're already panicked, when your brain is then like, oh my God, get out of this, get out of this, stop panicking, that is not going to work. You need to just in those moments try and just say, it's okay, you know, it's going to be okay. Getting perspective as well has been a massive thing for me, which is something that sounds quite simple, but and difficult to do in the moment sometimes. But when I get very wrapped up in things and when something's really bogging me down, sounds awful because it sounds horrible to say, but you have to think of why you're lucky and be grateful for things and, you know, say, okay, I'm here on this earth. I have people who love me and I love them. I can do things that I enjoy. You know, reminding yourself, it sounds so simple, but I think everything can become the end of the world, in inverted commas again. And it's not always the end of the world. And then all the other things like getting nature, listening to music. I love listening to music, put music on, dance around my room, all sorts of stuff. But yeah, I think the most important thing is knowing that you're important enough and you're deserving enough to take the time to work out what you enjoy and then doing it, because life is not about work and being stressed as much as we are led to believe that sometimes. And, you know, that can take over.
Well, thank you so much. I think that's really, really fantastic advice. And I really do think everything that you've said is so impactful. And it's just so important that we hear more and more people sharing their stories. I think it is, you know, one of the key ways that we're going to drive things forward and hopefully deliver that culture change that we've touched on so many times throughout this conversation. So thank you so much for sharing so openly and honestly with us. It's yeah, incredible. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I've loved it.
It's been an absolute pleasure to have you, Steph.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Making me blush.
That was a really interesting discussion that we had with Steph. And I'm sure lots of you have lots of thoughts about what you may have heard. Some of that stuff might have resonated with you. What did you guys think? Hatim, what was your take on that?
I actually thought it was remarkable as an interview because it's just so honest. And it takes a lot of bravery to come out and be able to reflect on that and actually share that her story. So from that point of view, it was just incredible to listen to. And it has a lot of, I think it has a lot of inspiration and motivation for those individuals that are potentially going through a similar type of experience, but don't know where to go or what to do. And there are many of us, I think, and one of the biggest things actually I took from it was just check on your colleagues and just do this, you know, the nice simple things, ask people how they are and see how they're doing. And it makes a massive difference to everyone's day. And I think that's sort of, general practice can be sometimes quite isolated, but at the same time, you actually have quite a big team in the same building. And hospital jobs, we know, are just bustling with people everywhere. So get to know the people around you, ask how they are, take interest in their lives and at least that way, if they are going through a difficult period of time, they might be able to come and speak to you about it and be supportive in that case.
Absolutely. And I think after the sort of 18 months of the pandemic, well-being and mental health awareness has been very much of a hot topic. And I definitely have had those moments where the cynic in me feels that sometimes is a bit of a tokenistic word. Johannes and I have definitely spoken about this before, about how well-being sometimes is bandied about to be on the top of people's agendas, but what does that truly mean and how can we make that meaningful connection make a difference in our everyday interactions with each other? I mean, Johannes, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I was going to say exactly the same thing. I think we've been exposed constantly to these ideas of resilience and well-being, and they seem like kind of additives that you have to, you know, add to your practice to survive. I think it's really important to kind of hear real stories and remind ourselves that, you know, actually having a huge impact on someone's happiness and well-being can be achieved just by doing those small things and by checking in. And I think some of the ways that we're told to be resilient and embrace well-being can seem a bit kind of artificial and overblown. And it, like Hatim was saying, it's the simple things that we do in practice that for a lot of people we've lost during COVID to some extent, that I think we kind of really need to focus back in on that now that we're starting to mix again as professionals. We're, you know, going back into our VTS groups, starting to see more patients face-to-face again. So So I think we just need to kind of shift back into that gear where, you know, we rebuild those relationships, and we, like Hatem said, just check in with people, see how people are doing, and not assume everyone's okay, because we've all had strange experiences over the last couple of years. You know, it's not all over yet. We've still got challenges ahead, blood test tubes, amongst many other things. But yeah, I think it's the simple stuff that counts, and I think we all have a lot that we can do.
Absolutely. And I think blood test tube is very topical, and amongst a lot of other things that are on people's minds right now, you know, Twitter's a firestorm talking about GPs and what work we're doing and what work we may not be doing, and looking out for each other. Is that happening in a very human, real way, or is it just happening because someone says that we have to do that? And I think one of the things Stephanie was talking about was the relief she felt from knowing things could get better, the things that she could put in place that would positively make a change in terms of having an exercise, doing some exercise, having a routine, things that she could quite simply do without having to access lots of help. Whereas she found other organizations quite helpful, and how she's spreading the good word in terms of like passing that message on and finding out what she has learned and what's helped her. And she just wants to pass that on to others. And I think that's a very strong message for anybody who's listening, is that you may have struggled at some point, and things that might have helped you, other people take for granted and may not even really know that exist. So if you're aware of resources in your local area, or you know of a really helpful supervisor, or within your VTS, someone's, you know, been on sick leave for a long time, or something else has changed and you knew them quite well before everything became Zoom and online, but now you haven't really kept in touch with them, just sending them a message here and there, I think, can make all of that difference. And I think the other thing to be said is, as doctors, we're expected continually to embrace change. So whether that's change of a rotation, a new job, a new supervisor, new portfolio requirements, new exams, more on that later, all of these sorts of things, there's a huge element of change within our lives. And I think also at the moment with COVID, there is that. So it's a very unsettling time, despite what people may say of things getting back to normal. It may be for some, but for others, it could be the complete opposite. So knowing that there is a support network around you, or at least knowing how to access that support network, I think is really critical.
Yeah, I just wanted to come in here and talk about, so when a few years ago, I was quite fortunate to be part of a national review into NHS staff and learner mental health and well-being. And I think we talk about these things being very often tokenistic. They've suddenly become part of portfolios. We have all these things like resilience training. Organizations say you need to do this and you need to do that. And of course, that then often adds stress or adds to negative well-being sometimes. But actually, we have to recognize that if we don't have these conversations at certain levels, we're never going to see this kind of culture change that we need within the NHS to happen to prevent stories like this. And I mean, in this case, you know, she shares how at times she had supervisors, education supervisors who aren't that supportive and aren't necessarily there for her when she needed them to be there for her. And I think that's important to recognize that actually that relationship isn't always perfect. And so if we don't actually make people realize that this is a core issue, it's more than just about resilience training or doing things yourself. It's about the system and how we need to improve the system around us and improve the support that we have around us. We're never really going to get to a place where they like to say the NHS is the best place to work. We're never going to reach that unless we really take in these things into account. And we recognize that there's some things that we're never going to be able to change, okay? Because we work in a health system and we have to deliver care for patients. But at the same time, people need to care for us as well. And we need to care for each other. So it's a core systemic issue. And I think if we don't recognize that, then we never really get past the sometimes often what are the real problems. But there are ways to improve it. And I think all of us as a generation, all of us that are early, you know, this is an early careers podcast, if we take the right attitudes, the right morals, the right ideas forward for our future, then it's going to be better for ourselves. It's going to be better for the next generation of learners coming through, you know, GP trainees coming through. And that way, I think we can create a system that works. And I mean, you know, the nice practices that we like to talk about are the ones that have the coffee breaks, are the ones that have time for all of us to speak to each other and spend time with each other, are the ones that are supportive. So let's just carry that culture on.
Absolutely, Hatem. I think any practice that you'll be in, I'm sure there'll be plenty of coffee breaks to have those really good, deep and meaningful chats, as we often have, that Bryn has to edit around all the time. I think that's all the time we have for today, but I really want to thank Stephanie once again for being so open and honest about her experiences that she's had with, you know, during her training, that I'm sure, again, a lot of you may have heard and feel, oh, yeah, I felt a little bit like that at times. But to also know, as she speaks very positively about the things that have helped her and the things that she's used to make her journey stronger, and that she's really enjoying what she's doing now and how she's recognizing when she does need to take a break or what she does need to do when times do get difficult. And I thought it would be lovely to sort of end on maybe two or three things that the podcasters here, we use to keep ourselves in check, ourselves a bit sane. I think I'll go first. For me, it's having social media breaks and going for walks with my dog. What about you, Johannes?
Well, I spent my weekend cycling to Brighton and then eating the biggest ice cream I've ever had. It was incredible. I love a bit of like exercise and then massive gluttony afterwards. That's my happy place.
I mean, that sounds wonderful. And how about you, Hatem? What's your happy place?
That's not too far off, really. I think good food is key. You know, it always raises those endorphins, particularly the sweet stuff. I need to be a little bit careful on that end, being from a South Asian background. But also, I think the most important thing is just spending time with the people that you love, and knowing that they're there, and that can be friends, family, it can be colleagues. You know, just enjoying time with people that are important to you.
Well, I think no truer words have been spoken from all of us there, and I think we'll leave it there. So we look forward to tuning in very shortly with another wonderful episode of the Early Careers podcast somewhere in between. We hope you do check us out on our Twitter accounts. We will be a little bit more active. If you want to get involved in future episodes, we're actively looking for trainees to around the country to share their experiences or talk to us about any things that matter to them, especially with the world of training and beyond, and First Fives as well in that, I have to say. But that's all from me, and take care. Bye.
Bye, Ron.
Bye.
No, enjoy your evening.
Thank you. I'm going to get some chocolate strawberries. Oh, have a good evening. Lovely to meet you, mate. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.